Hi all, this was an important letter and it has been verified and is of such importance to us all, I felt compelled to do a short show outlining it today. This is a major shift that I personally have been asking for from the front line of the old control system for many a year now. The police are but mere puppets in the old system, used as a physical barricade to the public, to the next layer of the puppets known as politicians. Neither carry any authority or power, and rendered as such as the fall guys in any given situation. The people will blame Trump, Boris Johnson, and many other leaders. But none of your so-called leaders have any authority to do anything. All are ran by intelligence agencies and think tank groups who really don't have all of humanity's interest at heart. Understanding this fact changes the way we go forward in the future. Some will say, why should we trust the police now? And it's a valid question, given the criminality, brutality, and complete disregard for the people in far too many cases. But not all people or groups are the same. And despite my own poor treatment in the past administered by the police, I do recognise they are in a poor position and a poor job in terms of finances and personal safety. In Exposé 2 of this series, a portion of it was read out by the Ghanaian president to his people, and one hopes he and many other heads of state that have listened to our shows from time to time read this out to the public en masse as well. Understanding the importance of what is playing out here and now and acting upon it is crucial. This was a deliberate plot to enslave humanity even further by a group of billionaire psychopaths who have lost the game in the bigger scheme of things and are just being petulant. The gist is to enslave us further by removing all forms of employment, and so all jobs will be at the behest of the billionaire conglomerate companies and the state. They will seduce people with the universal basic income program for those who don't comply with their initial wishes. Employment means forced vaccinations replete with microchips, which can essentially be observed as kill switches for those not complying. Then the rest of the unemployed will be dealt with by more stringent methods, all like an episode of the series Continuum. It is fascism on steroids. What we have undergone and undergoing here on this planet since the turn of the year is a coup d'etat, normally associated with hostile government takeovers, but this one is on all the people and all the countries on and in this planet. This is and has been a hostile takeover of the planet and all of its inhabitants outside of the select few spoken about in so-called conspiracy circles is now evidenced for all to see. We all need to stand up and fight back. Our enemies were not the people from different countries, colours, race, religions or genders. Our enemy is a common one, the 1% or the 99%, psychopaths or not, truth or lies, common sense or nonsense. No one is coming to save you from it. That is solely down to us all. Right. This was a letter written by a senior constable from the Coffs Clarence Highway Patrol in New South Wales, and signed by colleagues in Australia, and has exposed the COVID-19 narrative for its deception and the harm it is causing to the police and their relations with the public. Now, the letter was dated October the 26th and is addressed to NSW Commissioner of Police Michael Fuller, and is one of the best rebuttals of the COVID narrative of fear and control that has been written in many places now, not just Australia. It also notes false predictions of its severity, false and misleading statistics, flaws in testing, and serious questions around the virus itself. The letter makes the very strong point that in the same way, they cannot use an inaccurate speed detection device on motorists, the same must be demanded for the RT-PCR test, and as such, police should not in any way mandate testing for COVID-19 or rely on the results. Now, for the police to raise this within their own ranks, it may be portrayed as controversial, but the action is consistent with common law enforcement. For example, investigating, exposing and prosecuting a crime of deception carried out against the public. Now, the letter's signatories are urging fellow police officers across the country in Australia to write a similar letter to their respective police commissioners, and to sign this form, they need to go to this link, advocateme.wixsite.com/copsforcovidtruth. Now, the letter itself reads, open letter concerning the police enforcement of ongoing COVID-19 restrictions. And it says the following, we are writing to you to raise concerns we have about the use of the police to enforce the ongoing restrictions placed upon our citizens relating to COVID-19, which has seriously eroded community trust in our great police force. Since the Attorney General declared a state of emergency for the novel coronavirus, our governments have acted upon certain powers to impose restrictions on its citizens using the police to enforce their rules. Now, due to the novel nature of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, most people concurred that certain restrictions should be followed until more was learnt about the virus. With the initial modelling from the Imperial College in the UK, and this is reference point one, there are several in the original article, and the Peter Doherty Institute here in Australia, indicating a catastrophic number of cases that would severely burden our hospital system and could result in up to 150,000 Australian deaths. Reference point two. It is easy to comprehend why our governments would respond as they did and why the vast population would comply. With these frightening projections, it became evident that we needed to find a way to quickly diagnose the disease. Yet the Centre for Disease Control in the United States says that no quantified virus isolates of the 2019 COVID are currently available. That's a reference point three. No quantified virus isolates of the 2019 novel COVID virus are currently available. It doesn't exist. So even without the virus being isolated, the RT-PCR test was picked to become the gold standard for testing. We note that the modelling was later found to have serious calculation errors, such that experts who later reviewed it have said no serious scientist gives it any validity. Reference points 4 and 5. And now the RT-PCR test has been proven to be unreliable at best, with the inventor stating it should never be used to diagnose infectious disease because it cannot tell if what it detected is alive or dead. Reference points 6, 7 and 8. So the inventor of the test said it cannot be used to diagnose infectious disease because it can't tell if that disease is alive or dead. Virus. Yet this test is still being relied upon to make critical decisions in the interest of public health and safety, which is just about as the same level of misnomer as national security in America. And in the same way, we cannot use an inaccurate speed detection device to proctor a civilian speed. The same must be demanded of a faulty RT-PCR test, and as such, the police should not in any way mandate testing for COVID-19 or rely on any outcome of the results. Now that we have almost 12 months of statistical data that can be relied upon in place of flawed computer modelling, that's what the whole thing was based on, a flawed AI computer modelling. The problem is, who flawed it? And these statistics show a reality that is far from the modelling projections which were relied upon by the National Cabinet in their response. And here are some statistics which reflect this reality. For example, we now know that around 45% of people who contract the virus are asymptomatic, reference point 9. And asymptomatic transmission is between 0 and 2.2%, reference point 10. We also know that 80% of people who contract the virus will only have mild symptoms, reference point 11. The reference points are supporting documentation and information of the statements. And it is overwhelmingly the elderly and the immunocompromised who are at risk of severe symptoms that could result in death, reference point 12. At the time of writing, the worldwide survival rate for COVID-19 is 97.3%, reference point 13. The ordinary flu is 99.9%, reference point 14. Furthermore, statistics clearly show that while the confirmed cases may be on the rise, the percentage of deaths is plummeting. Sweden and Taiwan did not enforce lockdown on its citizens like much of the world did, although Sweden failed to take better precautions to protect the elderly in the early stages. Their death rate is comparable, and Taiwan's is outstanding. The statistics show there is a high infection rate across the globe, but very low deaths, regardless of whether there was a forced lockdown or not. And what we can derive from analysis of this is that these two distinctly different ways have resulted in much the same outcome. So whether you were locked down or you weren't, The results made no difference. We note from the recent federal budget, huge debt and unemployment, is that our lockdowns have created a series of problems that now seem to outweigh the threat this virus poses. In our line of work, we know that the socio-economical problems created here will transpire into a greater threat down the track as people struggle to deal with the collateral damage this is causing. We have been told that the advice from the World Health Organization is a key aspect to the National Cabinet response. Yet Dr. David Nabarro of the WHO recently stated, "We in the World Health Organization do not advocate lockdowns as the primary means of control of this virus." Reference point 15. So in spite of the facts as they now stand, it would appear that the National Cabinet has been lagging in its capacity to adapt to the reality of the situation, and this is causing them to fail in their duty to respond in proportion to the risks. The risk being overwhelmingly with the elderly and the immunocompromised. Reference points 16, 17 and 18. What is even more concerning is the prohibition on prescribing hydroxychloroquine for COVID-19, reference point 19, when over 121 peer-reviewed scientific studies have shown it to be effective in treating and preventing the disease, reference points 20, 21 and 22. Instead, the federal government has done a vaccine deal with AstraZeneca, just like Trump, reference point 23. And Australians told we cannot expect to go back to a normal until a vaccine arrives. AstraZeneca has been found guilty of offences relating to off-label or unapproved promotion of medical products, making false claims, kickbacks and bribery, consumer protection violations, healthcare offences, government contract violations and more. Since 2000, they have been fined over $1.1 billion for these offences and violations. Reference point 24. Still, they have been granted protection from future product liability claims relating to its COVID-19 vaccine. Reference point 25. Alarmingly, Prime Minister Scott Morrison stated that they will make the vaccine as mandatory as you can possibly make it. Reference point 26. In spite of the criminal record of the producer. Their exemption from liability claims, the fact we already have at least two approved and extremely safe medications in ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, shown to be effective treatments, and the reality that the virus does not pose a serious threat to the healthy. And it seems these decisions appear to be corporate interests only, and not in the best interests of public health and well-being as it's claimed. All this indicates that the ongoing restrictions on the healthy population is disproportionate response, yet the police are still expected to continue to enforce these measures, and at risk of being forced to vaccinate against a disease that is showing not to be virulent, with a vaccine that has no long-term safety studies, and then forcing it upon the population. The evidence would suggest resources are better directed to protect the vulnerable. We are concerned with the legitimacy of the actions. We are being told to take action against the citizens of Australia. States and territories cannot rise above the Commonwealth Constitution, as well as international treaties we are signatories to, yet this is still occurring. Now, these are the legal, lawful implications and protections of the public and their rights. Under the state of emergency, the emergency requirements are qualified and restricted by the significant fact that emergency requirements and directions cannot request an individual to be isolated, detained, tested, vaccinated, medically treated, or bodily searched in the absence of a biosecurity control order issued to the individual himself or herself. I'm going to repeat that again. That emergency requirements and directions cannot request an individual to be isolated, detained, tested, vaccinated, medically treated, or bodily searched in the absence of a biosecurity control order issued to the individual. These measures are referred to as biosecurity measures and are captured under Subdivision B of Division 3 of Part 3 of Chapter 2 of the Biosecurity Act 2015, reference number 28. Emergency and public health powers at the states and territories do not provide a carte blanche to breach an individual's human rights by isolating them or detaining them or testing them without the proper required notifications and risk assessments first. There is an intergovernmental agreement, reference 29, which places the Commonwealth in the lead as well as the Australian Health Sector Emergency Response Plan, reference number 30. This ensures that the state and territories act to complement the federal legislative framework. Article 7 of the International Convenant of Civil and Political Rights states, "No one shall be subjected to torture or cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment. In particular, no one shall be subjected without his free consent to medical or scientific experimentation." Reference point 31. Article 27 of the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties. A party may not invoke the provision of its internal law as justification of its failure to perform a treaty. Reference point 32. Article 7 of the Australian Human Rights Commission Act 1986 states, "No one should be subjected to torture or cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment. In particular, no one shall be subject without his free consent to medical or scientific experimentation." Reference number 33. Section 109 of the Commonwealth of Australia constitution states when a law of a state is inconsistent with a law of the Commonwealth, the latter shall prevail, and the former shall to the extent of the inconsistency be invalid. Reference point 34. With federal and international legislation breaches, it will be taken that we are complicit and consensual in undertaking on the people of Australia, potentially rendering us criminally liable under the Crimes Act 1914, reference point 35, as well as the Criminal Code Act of 1995, reference point 36. So what that is saying is the police are criminally liable for enforcing lockdown or mandating tests or vaccines. Many members of the force are fed up with the approach to enforce oppressive rules placed upon the population in the name of COVID-19 and the looming mandatory vaccinations. We feel a real calling to do our part to stop this oppression, so we are writing to you to raise the following issues. Police force employees have choice as to whether or not to receive vaccines. The police believe that all members of the community also have a choice around receiving vaccines. The police do not participate in any way in the forcing of vaccines upon the population. That the police association start preparing to defend police employees who choose not to be vaccinated. To raise the alarm that there is a global dictatorship occurring and the police force is being used as a tool to push these global and corporate agendas upon the population, and to warn the police force not to simply acquiesce to these requests, rules and laws, and to act in the best interests of its population, not tyranny of the government. Recently, letters have been written to our leaders from the legal fraternity, including high-profile judges and QCs, reference point 37. The Australian Institute for Progress, penned by 30 public intellectuals, including 15 professors of relevant disciplines, one of whom is an advisor on health and well-being economics to the UK government, reference point 38. Advocate these open letter to all leaders seeking to review disproportionate response to the SARS-CoV-2 virus, reference point 39, as well as hundreds of doctors from the medical fraternity, reference point 40, despite the government continually parroting that they are following the advice of, quote, the experts, unquote. I think we've seen this year there are no experts. All these requests have been ignored and the police used as the enforcers of these senseless rules. We ask you that you consider the information provided herein and the NSW Police Force Statement of Values. Each member of the police force is to act in a manner which places integrity above all, upholds the rule of law, preserves the rights and freedoms of individuals, seeks to improve the quality of life by community involvement in policing, strives for citizen and police personal satisfaction, capitalizes on the wealth of human resources, makes efficient and economical use of public resources, and ensures that authority is exercised responsibly. Many of us believe that we are removing our own rights and freedoms by enforcing these rules upon the community, including our family and friends. and the community are confounded by the intensified police enforcement around peaceful freedom protests, and how inconsistent this was when compared with the Black Lives Matter protests. This contradiction is further destroying public confidence. We are reaching out to all our fellow police officers across the country to write a similar letter to their respective police commissioners, or sign our form at advocateme.wixsite.com/copsforcovidtruth to show your support for this stance, which we have called Cops for COVID Truth. With trust in our police force now seriously eroded, we ask you to consider now challenging the necessity of the ongoing restrictions to restore community trust by being an integral part of our returning our state and country back to normality. Regards, Alexandra Cooney, Senior Constable, Coffs Clarence Highway Patrol, New South Wales Police Force, Grafton Police Station, 5 Duke Street, Grafton, Australia. This is a brave action to be taken. You have to remember that police officers are largely held to ransom as part of the Freemasonic Brotherhood Order, who have been known to threaten, blackmail and kill brothers who dare to speak out. And I'm asking all police in all countries to promote and distribute this also. I'm calling on all the people to support those brave enough to stand up and speak out, often under great stress from peers and those with hidden agendas. I'm asking Brendan's group in Australia and also THI Australia to highlight, promote and get behind this action. Right, here is just a few recent examples of this scamdemic to add to the background of what was supplied in the letter. RT-PCR detects presence of viral genetic material in a sample, but is not able to distinguish whether infectious virus is present. Oops. And this is a government report by David Linden. And today's breaking news is that a paper published on the government's website has revealed that the infamous PCR test is of no use in detecting whether a live infection is present. Zero. Zip. Nada. No use. Ministers are said to be fearful of a furious public backlash in reaction to what is now known to be an ongoing fraud used to spread disinformation about the infectiousness of a flu-like bug that can prove serious in a small number of cases. And the essence of what has happened is this. The PCR test has been carried out on a large and growing number of people. This has inevitably produced a large and growing number of positives. But the test has a number of possible flaws and is also prone to inaccuracy. And many have criticized the irresponsibility of using it as a proof of the spread of any disease. However, if properly done, can detect the presence of minute amounts of the remnants of genetic material from various viruses, of which COVID-19 is just one of them. The detection of the presence of these leftover bits of genetic material does not necessarily mean the person is currently infected with a live virus, because the test can't prove that. But it can show, for instance, that the person was to one degree or another previously infected, and often so mildly they scarcely noticed it. And some of the viral material from the previous infection has not yet been flushed out of their system. So the PCR test then detects these remnants and produces a positive when the virus could already be gone, or might not have existed, because it's part of our DNA, COVID virus, as we proved in an earlier show. These positives are then fraudulently called cases by the government. And it is not known at this stage the percentage of cases that were not actually cases, but it is believed, given that the test cannot detect a live virus. Oops. Now, the number of false positive cases for these tests are shown to be at least 90%. That is 90% wrong assumptions of an alleged infectious disease. And this is known by scientists, doctors, and governments. But they've ignored it, because like the puppets they are, they're told by the deep state and hidden agenda groups. And this has then enabled ministers to spread alarm that the number of cases that are showing up justified instructing people to self-isolate, instruct those they have been in contact with to self-isolate, lock down entire communities, and falsely declare that the disease is spreading out of control, and various other aspects of social and economic mayhem that have inflicted misery on the populace. An investigation is being urged into whether the fraudulent reporting of cases has also falsely inflated the COVID death stats. Well, we proved that in a recent show, I think it was in Exposé 3. And one source alleged that when the focus is on testing large numbers of very old people who are in care homes and people in hospital undergoing treatment for life-threatening illnesses such as cancer, and such people tend to test positive for COVID. They then die of old age or their existing condition within 28 days of having allegedly tested positive, and this would push up the COVID deaths or deaths with COVID numbers. That's been creating yet more needless alarm. In light of the information having been published on the government's own website, this is in the UK, it is evident that ministers may have known all along that their declared number of cases was fraudulent. And it is not known at this stage whether the government plans to apologise for the damage its miscreant behaviour has inflicted on the country, or whether ministers, advisers and so forth responsible will resign and or face criminal charges. It should be the latter. well, both resign and face criminal charges. Yet even through the uselessness of the PCR test has been admitted, the government is still using its results to justify further damaging measures and the ruination of thousands of businesses that rely on Christmas sales. The seriousness of these revelations can be best understood in the context of admissions by the chief medical officer as long ago as May, that COVID-19 is only dangerous in a very small number of cases, which is the elderly and people with immuno issues. These two facts throw into question what precisely the government has been playing at these past months. One source told this reporter that the disingenuous campaign by the government and its evident determination to use that disinformation to bring down the country raises questions that every citizen should be asking, namely, what the true agenda of the government is. And they sent a link, which I can post on the MeWe, of the actual government report. That stated it's all false. Next piece of evidence. This is from the Bernician. COVID-1984. Freedom of information request. UK government admits virus doesn't exist. While preparing the core papers for the private criminal prosecution of MPs for pandemic fraud, we have discovered that the Office of the Secretary of State for Mandatory Vaccinations has now admitted in a Freedom of Information request that they have no records which show that the cause of the COVID-19 virus has ever been proven to exist. Oops again. Secretary of State for Mandatory Vaccines has now admitted in a Freedom of Information request they have no records which show that the cause of the COVID-19 virus has ever been proven to exist. Admission of guilt. To put this in perspective, this is akin to the UK banks admitting that they never lend any money when we started alleging that against them more than a decade ago. Banks can't lend money, just saying. I wonder how few people know that banks are not allowed to lend money. And yet they do. They get around the system. It therefore doesn't take much effort to work out that the pressure of the private criminal prosecution has placed upon every serving MP has catalysed the beginning of the end for this treacherous parliament, one way or another. Moreover, since the UK government has confessed that they have no record of the existence of the cause of the supposedly deadly virus upon which the validity of Parliament's COVID-1984 policies is entirely dependent, no MP is capable of successfully pleading not guilty to our allegations of pandemic fraud. DHSC holds no information on isolation of SARS-CoV-2, which was the alleged cause of the pandemic? None. Nevertheless, here lies the very heart of the dishonesty which all COVID-1984 policies implemented in the UK continue to be predicated upon. In short, the cause of the virus, and therefore the virus itself, has never been proven to exist, and everybody in the Department of Health knows it. Criminal law treats such evidence as proof of intent to commit fraud for material gain, especially when the Secretary of State in question, who has corporate interests in Big Pharma at PSC of Portum Biopharma Limited, is knowingly pushing the mandatory vaccination agenda for a virus that doesn't exist. Diabetics are 10.3 times more likely to develop COVID-19 as their coronary, and their symptoms are more severe and life-threatening, with over a quarter of all infected patients already suffering from the illness as a pre-existing condition. And that's according to the Russian Deputy Prime Minister Tatyana Golikova, who told officials that coronavirus is especially dangerous for those suffering with the common metabolic disorder. So this is like a spin-off of certain diseases that we have within our own bodies. That's all it is. In patients with diabetes, COVID infection is 10.3 times more common. Or is it that the fact that the tests are showing up as diabetes, but adding it as COVID? This has to be questioned now. But she said that patients with diabetes experience the disease more severely and more frequently develop acute respiratory distress syndrome, as well as respiratory failure requiring artificial ventilation, and unfortunately experiencing higher mortality. And then we had this story last week. There has been a 98% plummet in flu infections this year, dispelling fears of a COVID and flu twindemic about which many have warned, mainly the portal people. For those new, that is the news readers on your TV, portal news from a different world. And experts say we can thank masks and social distancing for the drop in the flu. But experts are jackasses. There are no experts, as this year has clearly shown on many levels. Masks and vaccines clearly don't work as stated. Otherwise, they would not be so worried by those who don't participate in it. Now, although there is no mass flu testing as there is for COVID, the World Health Organization says that surveillance of data from around the world shows flu rates collapsing everywhere. Australia essentially skipped their flu season this year with not a single case of flu reported since July. That's their winter. Zero. No flu. And the report says, in fact, flu has more or less vanished throughout the southern hemisphere, and early indicators suggest it will follow suit north of the equator. And then they ask, what can explain this unprecedented decline? Well, they asked, and so I will reveal why. It's all a giant lie, is why. Flu hasn't disappeared. Fake COVID replaced it. And just when will the treasonous media and government officials report that as fact? The 2020 magic virus would go down in history as the most clever virus ever. A few more viruses like this, and we won't need a health service, biomachines or pharmaceutical drugs, as COVID cures everything. Flu, cancer, heart disease, heart failure, all disappeared. Then we got this report, July the 17th. The health secretary asked PHE in the UK to urgently investigate the way daily death statistics had been reported, leading PHE to say it was pausing the daily release. And this came after Oxford University experts revealed a significant proportion of the daily out-of-hospital death toll actually relates to patients who recovered from the virus weeks or months earlier. Weeks or months earlier being recorded as a death. Not an infection, a death. Now, under the previous system in the UK, and employed by many other countries, anyone who has ever tested positive for the virus in England was automatically counted as a coronavirus death, if or when they died, even if the death was from a car accident. Dr. Susan Hopkins, PHE's incident director, said, although it may seem straightforward, there is no World Health Organization agreed method of counting deaths from COVID-19. No, you just go to the math deficient John Hopkins Center. Just make shit up as you go along and throw it out and put fear on the public. That's how it worked. The same John Hopkins Center, along with certain people from Virginia who were involved with the Wuhan lab and the original virus. Just saying. Along with Harvard. And all this as the Canadian government is tendering and preparing bids to build quarantine facilities, which equals concentration camps to the observer. As we stand on the threshold and the corridors of uncertainty and tomorrow's distraction-based election now upon us, and not knowing what happens next, I can tell you what won't be happening next is we're all going to die, or we'll be lifted off the planet by some saviour ET program, as forecasted in the latest episode of The Twilight Zone. There is zero evidence in our world to support that narrative. No fear. We the people have the power, and they fear us far more than you realise, as their once together army dwindled into factions, all infighting. Their numbers and power dwindled also. They are racked with fear. Let us not replicate it. Fear and brute force control is all they have left now. Don't comply. Turn against those who wish to harm us with the banal narrative, like the news readers globally. We call them portal people for a reason. News from a different world to ours. Many have spoken out, and many are going along with the fraud, mainly being pushed by Bill Gates, the Soros Foundation, Rothschilds, Jared Kushner, Mark Zuckerberg with a silent F, and other social media platforms like Twitter and many more. They all have a common religion and race, and that is a key factor in this event. Ignoring that as a factor makes our goal more difficult in getting to the bottom of this global conspiracy against all of the people. This was all funded by bankers with the same religion or race also, along with the bought and paid off lackeys following their agenda due to blackmailing by those who wish to harm us. Me or others stating that is not racism, as ignoring the facts to avoid racism targeting renders the truth mute. Truth never fears investigation, and that should be our greatest common goal. I applaud this officer for his bravery to admit they have and are doing wrong, and that is a lesson for us all to observe going forward. But cops are like military generals, terrified to show weakness, and so act overly tough to not lose respect of their fellow officers. But this fake persona ruins many people's lives, including their own, as that inflexibility leads to mistakes, which leads to lies to cover it up, and leads to a downward spiral of decision making and loss of lives. It is not a weakness to make a mistake. It is a weakness if you cover up the mistake. But that mistake only gets labelled that should you not choose to recognise it and correct it. That mistake then becomes a life lesson to enable us all to make better decisions going forward. The person who never made a mistake never did anything in life. Many people distrust the police and the system now, but perhaps the people can find a truce with the police for now. The old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Well, let's be temporary friends for now. And just maybe we can make that friendship longer and more permanent in a better world. Message to the sleepers or conspiracy theory deniers. It's okay to be wrong. But what's not okay is to cover up that wrong whilst the world suffers. You are partly responsible for what is going on around this world, because you followed the Milgram experiment and obedience to authority. An authority that was self-imposed on us all due to our own inability to coalesce as one. We we have now built a club solely for and by the people. And I ask all groups to join in with us, no matter what is your interest. Because then we, the people, finally will have one collective voice, one collective group, and one giant enforcement team without weapons or violence to chart a better path for all of our futures. This has been the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name is Thomas Williams. I'll see you all on Thursdays. Bye for now.